But as we prepare for our meditation time, you're going to have a treat today. Not only one meditation, you're going to have three meditations, because we're going to have the Interfaith Amigos come up, and they're going to be leading us in their own way through meditation, so you get a taste of each. It's wonderful. But before that, I want to introduce to you, I'm going to introduce Rabbi Ted Falcon, but who really doesn't need an introduction, because Rabbi Ted is the scholar in residence here at Unity of Bellevue. And I've only gotten here, I got here at the end of October, and I was thrilled to hear that there was a rabbi on staff at a Unity church. I said, great, it's my kind of church. So it's been wonderful over the last few months. We have our monthly luncheon that we have been getting to know each other, and I can say he's becoming a very dear friend of mine who I treasure our friendship very much. And when I heard that he's been here, Jamal's been here, Don's never been here, to the Sunday morning service, and the Interfaith Amigos have not been here at Unity of Bellevue. They've been here for Ben Olive on Friday evenings, but they had never been. Don said, it's kind of nice seeing this place in the daylight. I said, for part of our season for peace and nonviolence, I was talking one lunch with Rabbi Ted, and I said, I would love to have the Interfaith Amigos. What a wonderful way to celebrate peace and nonviolence, to be able to begin to talk about how we can come together, how we are similar, and have a dialogue on interfaith. So that's what we're doing this afternoon from 1 to 3, and they're going to be talking about the Golden Rule today, so we'll see who's right. But they also have a book, Getting to the Heart of Interfaith, an eye-opening, hope-filled friendship of a pastor, a rabbi, and it says sheikh, but he's an imam now. So let's welcome warmly Rabbi Ted Falcon.
We hid my microphone in the flower pot, where, of course, last service I forgot it. It's a pleasure to be here, always, for me. It's a pleasure to be getting to know Nancy and Bill and be part of the energy of welcoming them to this community and to this really remarkable church. Sometimes when I wind up speaking by myself now, I feel somehow, where are the other guys? So here they are. I'd like to introduce, like Jamal Rahman, you know, because he has spoken here before. Jamal is like the walking reincarnation of Rumi. When we used to do a radio show, we had a radio show for a year, and whenever nobody knew what to say, we would look at Jamal. And there'd be like about a 5-second, and then the quotes would start flowing. So, welcome, Jamal. Don McKenzie is our claim to respectability. Jamal and I both, for me in the past tense, for him in the present tense, had kind of alternative congregations. Jamal is the co-minister of the Interfaith Community Church, and you know I had been the founding rabbi of Beit Olive Meditative Synagogue. Don was the head of staff of the University Congregational United Church of Christ across the street from the University of Washington. Took me months to learn the name. So whenever we wanted to do any sizable program that was too large for this place or Jamal's place, we would be at Don's church. Don is also tall, which gives Jamal and me comfort when we travel together, because he could see what's happening in a crowd. And Don is going to pick up a guitar later, actually. The other part of his life is as a musician. He's with a group who actually performed at the Grand Ole Opry, and this is Pastor Don McKenzie.
Thanks. But seriously, folks.
Yeah.
So we're going to lead you in a meditation. We had to take a breath there. And so we invite you to get comfortable, sit up straight, feet on the floor, however you like to come into this moment. And be aware of your breathing. And as you breathe in, be aware that you are breathing in the sacredness of the universe. As you breathe out, be conscious of letting go of all the doings and havings that normally define our lives. And live into, as you breathe, live into the wholeness of your being. Just your being. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Come into the wholeness of your being.
And now, my friends, if you kindly focus your attention on your physical heart and with your consciousness, embrace your heart. Your heart has been yearning, thirsting to connect with you. Can you begin to listen to your heartbeat? And now please ponder on this beautiful revelation by God in a dream to Prophet Muhammad, where God says to humanity, I cannot be contained in the space of the earth. I cannot be contained in the space of the heavens, but I can be contained in the space of the pure, loving heart of my servant. Be with that mystery, that divine heart is in the human heart. The space in your heart is infinite. And now, if you can in any way, bring yourself and place yourself deep in the vastness of your heart. Enfold yourself into divine heart and to your soul. Tell your heart, with feeling, I love you. I love you so much, no matter how awkward it feels. Unabashedly, tell yourself, I love you, or I cherish you, or simply thank you. Again and again and again, please. And now stop saying anything at all. Just be with your heart and be absolutely still.
The open heart connects us to the source of our being. And from that source, an endless outpouring of blessing, an endless gift of deep joy, a gift of life that we welcome now into every cell and every level of our being. Every breath, a breath of love. Every breath, a breathing in of the deep compassion with which we are embraced at this moment. What a gift to be able to share this space of blessing, this space of love. And what a sweet challenge to imagine the ways in which we will walk this blessing, the ways we will walk this love into our world this week. Perhaps imagining some of the places we'll be and some of the people we'll meet, and bringing the vibration of compassion, the light of love, so that we might witness in them the awakening of that spark, so that we might be among those supporting greater love and greater compassion wherever we are. Every breath brings the energy of blessing more fully into our physical selves, an energy of rejuvenation and of healing. Every breath reminding us of the gifts we receive and the gifts we are enabled to share. Becoming aware of how the body is supported in this space. And taking a few gentle breaths. And when you're ready, allowing your eyes to open and simply be aware. I thought you were going to do a song. Okay, if you're not going to do a song, we'll do a song. So we have a theme song. I mean, any decent Interfaith Amigos group has a theme song. And our theme song contains Arabic, Hebrew, and English. The Arabic is...
The words are Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim, in the name of God, boundlessly compassionate, infinitely merciful. La ilaha illallah. Literally, it means there is no God but God. And the inner meaning is really, it's all just one.
And the Hebrew is Adonai hu ha-Elohim hu. The absolute transcendent one is that one that awakens within each one of us. That is the one. And the English?
The English is, I am as I am.
And the English is?
It's all one. And I am as I am. Which means, it's all one. And I am as I am.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. La ilaha illallahu. La ilaha illallahu. Adonai hu ha Elohim hu. Adonai hu ha Elohim hu. It's all one and I am as I am. It's all one and I am as I am.
Now we'll do that as a sing-along. So we're going to talk about the Golden Rule, which is essentially the central expression of compassion in action, compassionate living. And then we're going to take a vote. I've been here long enough, and you know me well enough to know when I'm joking. But you can imagine sometimes what happens when we go to other groups that don't have that prior awareness.
Which is when I say, but seriously, folks.
Exactly. Karen Armstrong wrote a new book on compassion. 12 Steps to Compassion, I think. And one of the things she comments on, she asked the question, who was the first to state the Golden Rule? And she finds documentation that the first person to do so was Confucius, somewhere between the 5th and the 4th centuries BCE, before the Common Era. When Confucius was asked by his students, what is a practice that I could do all the time? You know, like, what can I do all day? And that's what he said, what you can do is compassion. What you can do is kindness. And he actually stated it, do not do unto others as you would not have them do to you. It's like if you only need one thing, there it is. And it appears in the prophetic literature of around that same time. It's almost like there was an expansion of consciousness that allowed us to perceive that oneness was not something that happens out there, but it's something in which all of us are intimately involved. Namely, we are sharing one life. We are sharing one being. We are sharing one presence. And the Golden Rule is not so much a rule, a regulation, as it is a description of reality. Because how we treat another is how we treat ourselves. The energies we put out are the energies we reap. So we don't treat another kindly because it's a nice thing to do. Or we don't treat another kindly because we should. We treat another kindly because we are each other. Because that which gazes at us behind the eyes of the other is the same one who gazes at the other through our eyes. And when we attain those moments when we can transcend the shells of the separate ego and perceive the truth of the nature of our being, the golden rule awakens. In Jewish tradition, specifically in the first century, the community was ruled by a chug, a pair of teachers. And during the time when pairs kind of ritually ruled, obviously we weren't in control then of the political power, but this was the spiritual power, the religious observance, there was a more conservative teacher and a more liberal teacher. So the various ends of the spectrum would be represented. And the story is told that a non-Jew approached the more conservative of the teachers, named Shammai, and said to him, "I challenge you, teach me everything about Judaism while standing on one foot." It's never quite said whether it was Shammai who was to stand on one foot or whether the non-Jew was standing on one foot, but someone was standing on one foot. Shammai was a carpenter. Jesus wasn't the only Jewish carpenter in the first century. And Shammai had a measuring rod in his hand, and he walked over to the guy who asked the question, and he hit him over the head. The guy actually didn't find that response satisfactory. So he went to Hillel, and he asked the same question, "Tell me the essence of Judaism while standing on one foot." And Hillel said, "Do not do unto others that which is hateful to you." That's the whole Torah. All the rest is commentary. Go now and study. And that, of course, the questioner found much more acceptable, and that is the line most frequently quoted in terms of the Jewish, where the golden rule cropped up in Jewish tradition. But through the years, I've grown to have a greater respect for Shammai's answer. You know, I suppose it began with studying Zen literature and learning that many of the teachers, when asked a question by their students, would strike the student, not at a beating, but strike as if to say, "Wake up. You're asking me something that you already have the answer to, and if I answer it, I give a lie to that." Because the danger of answering always in words is that rather than doing, you'll talk it. Rather than really knowing, you'll simply repeat it by rote. So I imagine that what Shammai was doing was saying to that fellow, "Wake up, it's already inside you." The essence of the faith, perhaps the essence of every faith, if it's real, awaits awakening within each and every one of us. So I don't yearn to be struck with the measuring rod, but I yearn to remember that the grounding of compassion and the grounding of the golden rule is carried within each of our hearts, within each of our minds, and within each of our beings. And when we create contexts in which we are able to come more fully alive, that kindness becomes real. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Thanks, Rabbi Ted. You know, it's an interesting experience of the imagination to think about the possibility that Shammai and Hillel and Jesus might have met somewhere. They all lived in the same part of the world and lived pretty much at the same time. You know, a Starbucks or a sports bar, or, you know, and talked about the Golden Rule. Obviously, something like that happened. I mean, how did these things get transferred from one tradition to another, from one group to another, and so forth? Caravans, of course, probably brought some of this with them from China and India and so on. But we're all connected, and I like to think about that. The Golden Rule, as it's called in Christianity, appears in the Gospel according to Matthew and the Sermon on the Mount, which is a collection of sayings. Chapter 7, verse 12, where it says, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This is the law and the prophets." And I want to stop right there because the word law has been a problem for 2,000 years. Namely, because Christian people have used that as a tool to repudiate Judaism. The word law, the word that is translated in as law in Greek is nomos, N-O-M-O-S. And it means three different kinds of things. Legalism is one of them, but it also is a specific reference to Torah, which is the teachings, or to Jewish religion in general. But we Christian people have often said Christianity is about love and Judaism is about law. It's not true, but it's profoundly unfortunate that that word is like that, especially in that verse, because it's Jesus is saying the same thing as Hillel. This is it. Go and do it. And I think of, as Jesus took that to be a very central part of his ministry, I received that as a kind of container. Like a pitcher of water on the kitchen counter, you know, without that pitcher, the water would just be all over the place. Well, we are the water, and we need something. We, human beings, need something to hold us, especially when things get difficult and so forth, or especially when we're needing to grow and increase our awareness, when we're needing to wake up. So, as Rabbi Ted has said, and as Imam Jamal will say, nothing could be more central if you need one thing than this golden rule. To me, the problem that is between us and the realization of that verse has to do with the functioning of the ego in human experience. The ego, of course, an important part of our beings, is designed to help protect us and support us and so forth, but often all of that gets in the way or eclipses the possibility of opening our hearts to the lives and needs of other people. And my evidence for that is the fact that all the great stories in the world are about that. In a way, a story begins in an ordinary place where the ego's in control. Something extraordinary happens, and then the rest of it is whether or not that extraordinary thing somehow gets into the ordinary so that the heart can be opened and people can grow and help each other. Service. Two examples. The story of the Good Samaritan, everybody knows that story. A man is beaten and robbed on the road between Jerusalem and Jericho. He's left to die. Two people walk by on the other side of the road, but the third one, a Samaritan, stops and helps him, puts him on his donkey, takes him to an inn, gives the innkeeper money, and says, "I'll be back. If you need more money, I'll give it to you then." The story is told by Jesus in response to the question, and who is my neighbor? And who is my neighbor? And at the end of the story, Jesus says to the questioner, which one of these three was neighbor to the man who was beaten? And the questioner said, the one who showed mercy. And Jesus said, go and do likewise. Then the other story that I think is equally good is from the conclusion of To Kill a Mockingbird, where the two children have been set upon by Bob Yule, a man who is very angry at the children's father, Atticus Finch, who has defended a black man accused of raping Bob Yule's daughter, Mayella. But instead of hurting the children, he gets killed. And it becomes clear as the story unfolds then toward the end that the person responsible for saving the children is the recluse Boo Radley, their next-door neighbor, who carves little things and leaves them in a hollow of a tree for the children. And so the children have this mystery of Boo Radley, and in addition, a kind of a fear and an affection. And so they're standing in the living room of the Radley home, and the sheriff is there, and it's clear that something awful has happened. And they're wondering where Boo Radley is, and Scout, the little girl, goes over and reaches out and takes Boo Radley's hand and brings him out of the shadow into the light and calls him by his name, Arthur. And to me, that is an exact replication of the Good Samaritan story, reaching out and saying, you are a whole human being. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Thank you, Brother Don. I've heard my two brothers talk about the golden rule, of course, many, many times. And what really splashes in my chest is that these teachings are so Islamic. And that's, of course, because my rabbi friend and my pastor friend are two of the best Muslims I know. Because to be a Muslim simply means to surrender your false self, called the nafs in the Quran, so that, as the Quran says, you can bring a heart turned in devotion to God. In Islamic spirituality, in the Quran, there's a word called spaciousness. One of my favorite verses in the Quran is where God says, and I spread out the earth as a carpet for you, so you may walk therein on spacious paths. To be really able to, as my brothers have said, not just talk about the golden rule, but to practice, to live the golden rule, one has to cultivate, create an inner spaciousness. And again, in Islamic spirituality, some of it which is called Sufism, they talk about the urgent need and the most powerful, majestic need to cultivate compassion for oneself. Because it is in the womb of this compassion that one's divine identity comes forth. Ushers, flowers. But particularly among many techniques of creating this spaciousness, is the primary technique of embracing what is called not only one's 10,000 joys of life, but also one's 10,000 sorrows of life. Not just the easy feelings, but the difficult feelings. The Quran says all feelings are sacred. Carl Jung, who studied many Eastern traditions, he would say something like, Jamal, for once in your life will you have the grace, the courage, the compassion to kiss the dragons within you. That is how they transform into a prince or princess. The 13th century sage Rumi, he exclaimed, he uttered, take a pickaxe and break open your stony heart. The heart's matrix is glutted with rubies. Springs of laughter are buried inside your chest. So, as the brothers have said, to open your heart. And Islamic teachers are very eager to explain why compassion is so critical. How do we explain that? The best way is to look at the metaphor in nature of water. There is nothing as soft and yielding as water is, yet for overcoming the hardest, the most insurmountable, the most powerful, nothing is as powerful as water is. Also, as the Quran says, wherever water falls, life flourishes. So the person who is authentically compassionate is the one who has authentic strength and is life-giving, and is the one who is in the best position to practice the golden rule. One quick point on the point, also the critical need to enhance, to expand one's awareness. The most used word in the Quran is Allah. The second most used word is ilm, knowledge. So one important aspect of increasing this knowledge is to understand the difference between behavior and being of the other. A person's behavior can be evil, but a person's being is inviolable. It is sacred. It is Christ nature, Allah nature, Elohim nature, Buddha nature. So how do you practice that? The wonderful Sufi Kabir says, his famous words are, do what is right. Protect yourself. Don't allow yourself to be abused. Call the police, bring a lawsuit. But he says, I beg you, in doing this, please, never keep this person's essence, being, out of your heart. Just this awareness in one's words and actions, just this discernment, has the power to shift heaven and earth. Then can I move from the knowledge of the tongue to the heart, said Prophet Muhammad. He is Islamic koan. Ponder on this. There is a patriotic monkey who goes to the neighborhood ponds or lakes to pluck the fish out of water to save them from a watery grave. And the last one, to really understand, as my brothers have emphasized, we are all interconnected. A verse in the Quran says, every soul where you turn is the face of Allah. The poets say, thou canst not pluck a petal without the troubling of a star. How do I deal with the other in this interconnectedness? The Quran says, get to know the other on a human level. God has deliberately created diversity so you might get to know the other. In other words, can we practice the three cups of tea? Listen, respect, connect. Then in Rumi's words, we're coming out of the circle of time and entering the circle of love. Thank you.
And to give you some idea of interconnection, Jamal's going to tell a story.
The mullah, who's the archetype in telling stories, the mullah goes to lunch, opens his lunch pail box, and what does he find? A cheese sandwich. Second day, third day,
fourth
day. He
goes to work the next day with his coworkers, sits down, they open up their lunch pails, he looks in his lunch pail, unwraps the sandwich, and he goes, a cheese sandwich, again. Goes to work the next day, sits down, opens up his lunch pail, opens up the sandwich, another cheese sandwich.
His colleagues say to him, why don't you tell your wife, be kind, make me some other kind of sandwich.
And he says, but I'm not married. Who makes them? I do.